Afghanistan. The Iraqi government carried out its first executions of rebel insurgents since the fall of Saddam Hussein almost 3 years ago. The government says 13 terrorists were hanged today. The announcement listed the name of only one of them, a former policeman in the northern city of Mosul. He allegedly confessed he'd worked with Syrian foreign fighters to enlist fellow Iraqis to kill police and civilians. That seaport security debate seems to be coming to an end. A company owned by the United Arab Emirates now says it will transfer the operations it's buying at 6 U.S. ports to an American entity. Earlier, the deal appeared headed for defeat, with growing strong opposition in Congress. His main flight instructor is delivering a report card for Zacharias Moussaoui. The teacher at the Oklahoma Flight School told a federal jury outside Washington today Moussaoui was a fairly poor student, but likely could have earned a pilot's license if he'd had more training. Former Washington, D.C. Mayor Marion Barry is on probation for 3 years. That sentence came today in connection with charges that he failed to file federal or local tax returns for the year 2000. Barry pleaded guilty last October under a deal with federal prosecutors. He was required to admit his failure to file returns for 99 through 2004. In today's hearing, Barry told the judge he takes full responsibility. Americans living longer, working shorter. Government report out today shows fewer than one in five men, 65 and older, still in the labor force by 2003. That's down from nearly 50% in 1950. Women working in much greater numbers earlier in life, but once they hit 65, only one in 10 is working. That number fairly steady since 1950. This is Air America Radio News.
Good evening, Truth Seekers. Malloy here on Air America Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Hold off on your phone calls for a while, all right? I hate to have everybody just sitting on hold. I know how irritating it is, and it's going to be a while before we get to the calls tonight. So might be a good idea. Just kick back and listen to the program. Tonight is, if there's a theme to the program tonight, it's the three-letter acronym used in so many emails, WTF. That's what the program's about tonight. Oh, my God. I don't know where to start with this. The only sound we're going to play tonight is the protester when Condoleezza Rice was testifying before a committee today. That only runs what, Kathy, 20 seconds? And the little tag out that, what's her name at CNN? Rush's...
Darren Kagan,
right. You know, I used to know her name as well as mine until I found out she was Boykin Rush, and that was it. I just can't. But I hear they've broken up. Did you hear that?
Which one of them is gay this week?
I don't know. I have no idea. just a couple of things from the WTF file. Brad at bradblog.com sent this to me at the last minute here. A candidate in Florida. This is from the St. Pete Times. I don't know what he was running for, but he was running for something. And in this particular area, they used the Sequoia touch screen voting machine, Sequoia, like the tree. And the guy, the two candidates, one was named Cook and the other was named Taylor. Now, this is what it says in the St. Pete Times. When Cook tried to vote for himself, the machine flipped his vote over to Taylor. He watched it happen. A precinct worker finally moved Cook to a different booth. Later in the day, Cook said he had other reports of voting machines malfunctioning in similar ways. And then it says here, the flipping machines used in the Pinellas County, Florida election were paperless touchscreens made by Sequoia Voting Systems, the same paperless touch screen systems whose purchase and future use in New Mexico was recently banned in that state in light of a lawsuit where many voters complained of the same type of vote flipping on the machines during the 2004 presidential election. These are also the same machines which lost more than 12,000 votes in Bernalillo County, New Mexico in 2002. And then Brad writes, I think Brad wrote this, on the other hand, this is Florida after all. So as Pinellas County, Florida Supervisor of Elections Communications Director Nancy Whitlock says, there's nothing to worry about. No one else complained, so it's unlikely the problem affected many, if any, other votes, she said. Jesus. Candidate stand there voting for himself, and he watches his vote flip to the other guy. Okay. A little bit later tonight, I'm going to share something with you that was written at one of my favorite websites, blog sites, and that is comearmageddon.blogspot.com, and it's going to push the envelope a little bit as far as over-the-air radio is concerned when I read this. I'm going to clean it up just a tad, but if you have the ability to go to her its website, whatever, go to comearmageddon.blogspot.com and check out what is written there. It's a heartfelt apology to the people of the legislature in South Dakota that just passed the Anti-Abortion Act. We'll get to that later. I've got to let a little time go by, because, like I said, this is going to be kind of pushing it a bit. Maybe it'll get us taken off the air. I don't know. In just a few minutes, we're going to continue part two of our three-part interview with Philip Markowitz, the 83-year-old author and Holocaust survivor. He's about to publish his memoirs, My Three Lives, and is kind enough to come on this program and give us a preview by discussing this. And the last thing here, Madison, Wisconsin area Truth Seekers, there are two opportunities next Tuesday the 14th. Come by and say howdy. I'll be at Hawk's Bar and Grill at 425 State Street, along with the Mike 92.1's Lee Rayburn, from 11 a.m. till 2 p.m. next Tuesday, coming the 14th. And then at 7 p.m. that same night, University of Wisconsin College Democrats have invited me to give a speech at the Whitewater campus that evening. So I hope to see just tens and tens of people out there. This is in today's a newspaper at what is this, from San Diego, I guess. Yeah, it's one of the newspapers in the San Diego area. Here's what it says. A San Diego County woman is suing her former employer, accusing her manager of firing her on the spot when she saw the woman's car had a bumper sticker advertising a progressive talk radio station. The suit also alleges that after seeing the sticker, the employer commented that the woman could be a member of Al-Qaeda. In a civil suit filed at the county courthouse in Vista, California, Linda LaRocca is targeting both her former manager, Beverly Fath, and the company she briefly worked for last year, Advantage Sales and Marketing, Inc. Neither LaRocca nor the defendants could be reached for comment Wednesday. LaRocca's attorney declined comment. LaRocca, who was hired by the company as a sales representative, is seeking lost wages and damages for wrongful termination for violations of both public policy and the state labor code. She is also claiming state constitutional violations and emotional distress. According to LaRocca's suit, the bumper sticker on her car read 1360 Air America Progressive Talk Radio. That's KLSD. And then the article goes on here. The nationwide syndicated radio programming from left-wing Air America, which describes itself as progressive entertainment talk radio, blah, 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 called the Clear Channel-owned KLSD on Wednesday afternoon was not immediately returned, blah, 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 blah. In her lawsuit, LaRocca asserts on October 8, 3 weeks after she started working for the marketing company, Beverly Fath called her on a Saturday and requested they meet at a nearby grocery store parking lot so LaRocca could pass on some documents Fath needed. During the brief encounter, LaRocca charges, the manager pointed to the bumper sticker, the only one on LaRocca's car, and remarked that it was a new sticker and called it that Al Franken left-wing radical radio station. LaRocca alleges in her suit that Fath then told her, the country's on a high state of alert. For all I know, you could be Al-Qaeda. A stunned LaRocca laughed at the statement and then was dealt the final blow when Fath fired her on the spot. Jesus. And some of you folks wonder whether or not these right-wing weasels and vermin and termites and scum and Nazis aren't launching a full-scale, full-fledged attack to try to knock Air America off as many stations as possible. Don't kid yourself. It's going on. We know it's going on, and we're doing everything we can to fight back. One way you can fight back in Phoenix, there's a website. You heard me talk about it the past couple of nights. SaveAirAmericaRadioPhoenix.com. California. Hey, Mike, having listened to your show for the past few months, I can safely say that I do not suffer from paranoid schizophrenia after all. However, sometimes I wish I did. At least there are pills for that. Homeland Security Michael Chertoff said this morning, he was testifying, quote, a deadly strain of bird flu could appear in the United States in the next few months as wild birds migrate from infected nations. Gee, Mike, do you think it will get here in time for the 2006 elections? Would that be a coincidence? I wouldn't be surprised if Rove was somehow behind the upcoming pandemic, and if the pandemic somehow managed to first wipe out the blue states before it was contained, I think we've already established that Herr Rumsfeld owns a stake in Tamiflu, right? I'm sure a pandemic would be rather profitable for old Rummy. To right-wingers, I know I sound crazy, but honestly, I don't give a damn. The Bush crime family is evil. I don't put anything past them. All the best. Brian, Orange County, California.
Responsibility. They can't run and hide. Pissed us off, so we voted for Republicans, a form of suicide.
Republicans suck! Suck, 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 suck.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money.
Us online at OperationHope.org.
Subliminal messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
Twenty-two past the hour.
I smoke to join
Now, as far as feeling schizophrenic, how about this? This is in the New York Times dated, now get this, this is important, date of March 10th. That's tomorrow, right? Okay, it says here, New York Times, headline, U.S. to abandon Abu Ghraib and move prisoners to a new center. And it starts by saying the American military said Thursday, today, that within the next several months, it plans to relocate all its detainees from Abu Ghraib. The sprawling penal compound west of Baghdad became notorious throughout the world after photographs were made public of American soldiers abusing Iraqi prisoners there. The prison would be turned over to the Iraqi government, American military officials said. General Peter Pace, chairman of the Joint Chiefs, talked about the plan to leave Abu Ghraib at a Senate hearing in Washington. General Pace said military officials in Baghdad that the exact timing to the move was unclear. We do have plans to do that, General Pace said. It should be several more months before the new American-run detention center is finished. Right. New York Times, dated tomorrow. American Forces Information Service, which is defenselink.mil, the American Forces Information Service, dated March 9th, today. Headline, U.S. has no immediate plans to close Abu Ghraib prison. It says blah, 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 and then it says news reports that the U.S. military intends to close Abu Ghraib within the next few months and to transfer its prisoners to other jails are inaccurate, officials said. There's no, it says here, specific timetable for that transfer or for closure of the Baghdad prison, they said. Decisions regarding Abu Ghraib and other detention facilities in Iraq will be based largely on two factors, the readiness of Iraq's security forces to assume control of them, that'll be never, and infrastructure improvements at the facilities. Blah, 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 blah. It also says the Abu Ghraib facility, which houses about 4,500 prisoners, became notorious after isolated reports of prisoner abuse were made public in 2003. Defense officials condemned the action sharply, insisting that detainee abuse is not tolerated. Six soldiers at the Abu Ghraib facility were tried on abuse charges. All detainees are treated humanely in accordance with the Geneva Convention and receive military medical care similar to what deployed U.S. service members receive, officials said. Now, both of these stories apparently are just dripping with horse hockey, right? One in the New York Times, dated tomorrow, that says it's going to close. The other one dated today in Armed Forces, American Forces Information Service, that's the propaganda arm of the U.S. military, says, no, 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 it's not going to close. But I like that little thing they add at the end. All detainees are treated humanely and receive military medical care similar to what U.S. service members receive. So you want schizophrenia? We have schizophrenia. Just remember what the topic is tonight, with the exception of our guest coming up here in a couple of minutes right after this break. The subject tonight is WTF, all caps, and it's what you send back and forth with your friends when you have something particular to call their attention to in an email. I got this, too. Who sent this to me? It says, Dear Conservative, this is forwarded to me. In less than 3 weeks, on March 27th and 28th, Vision America's The War on Christians conference will convene at the Omni Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C. If you want to register for this crucial conference, the first to address every aspect of the war on Christians, please click here. The only way we can stop the vicious and escalating assaults on Christians is by exposing, confronting, and countering the forces of hatred and bigotry. Hollywood, the New York Times, network news shows, the ACLU, the Anti-Defamation League, and the rest of the anti-Christian wrecking crew. Besides nationally prominent speakers like Alan Keyes, Gary Bauer, Senator John Cornyn, Phyllis Schlafly, and Senator Sam Brownback, and Congressman Tom DeLay, the conference will feature illuminating panel discussions. Let me tell you about just one of our panels, Christian Persecution, Reports from the Front Lines. The panelists all have experienced anti-Christian discrimination firsthand. They are Lloyd Marcus, an African-American artist who initially had his paintings censored from a public showing for Black History Month because they contained church scenes. Pastor Tom Krause from Massachusetts, who was charged over $6,000 for police protection for a public meeting on coming out of the homosexual lifestyle. in an attempt to stifle his First Amendment rights. Michael Markovich was one of the Philadelphia Four. Christian activists were arrested and prosecuted for quietly witnessing at a gay festival. If convicted, each one could have faced up to 47 years in prison. There's more here. If you want to go, all of this is at the War on Christians conference coming up March 27th and 28th at the Shoreham Hotel in Washington, D.C.
Prisoners east to the boats for their hanging from the gallows overlooking Guantanamo Bay. He's a cowboy president, but he wears a black hat.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Clarence Young, a scientist at GlaxoSmithKline, on how far he's willing to go.
Finding a new antibiotic is about as easy as catching one particular snowflake. It takes about 15 years to find one that works. Then, as soon as the bacteria develop resistance, we're right back where we started. But everyone benefits from antibiotics, so the war never stops. At GSK, quitting's just not an option.
GlaxoSmithKline. Today's medicines, tomorrow's miracles.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
Well, Club, we read a real classic, The Mac and Cheese Box. Let's discuss.
Oh, I loved it. The boiling of the water, the adding of the salt.
What about the French directions?
Yeah, Bouillie d'eau de tasses. So romantic.
Yeah.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What about next month? How about the French fried onion can? I've been dying to read it. Oh.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit SearchDogFoundation.org. Made possible by SearchDog USA.
with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
It's about 26 before the hour. Last Thursday, we introduced you to a man named Philip Markowitz, who is a Polish-American who came to this country after World War II, after surviving the Jewish ghetto at Lodz, Poland, and surviving Auschwitz, and surviving Flossenbürg. Philip?
Hello.
Hey, Philip, how are you?
Fine, how are you, Mike?
I'm doing great. I was telling the audience, you lost your younger brother, or no, your younger brother Henry survived the war with you, but your older brother died in the ghetto.
Yes.
Your sister, Sevilla, was gassed in a truck with her son, Chilek.
And my mother.
And your mother, Dina. Dina or Dina?
Pardon me?
Your mother's name?
Dina Tsipora.
Dina, that's right. Yeah. And
can I have a little more sound? I can hardly hear you.
Okay. Can you hear me better now?
A little better, yeah.
Okay. And then your father also died in the Lodz ghetto.
Right. Definitely.
All right. Now, I'm sorry to preface tonight's conversation with all of that death, but I do it to bring people up to the point that we were last week. You had described a bit life in the ghetto and how people died of starvation there, and then the transferal to Auschwitz on the trains, and then I believe you were telling us about the transferal from Auschwitz to Flossenbürg. Is that
right?
Okay. Let's.
Well, yeah, right. So first from Auschwitz is not the Flossenbürg. From Auschwitz, we were sent to a working camp in Gross Rosen.
Gross Rosen, right.
Rosen. And it was, Gross Rosen had satellite, small little working camps all over the place over there, about five camps around Gross Rosen.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in one of them. Over there, we built tunnels and do all different kind of things.
Now, they would send you out from the work camp?
Yes, yes. We went through the woods. And we cleared the woods and build roads and tunnels and things.
How were the prisoners in this work camp treated in relation to Auschwitz? If people weren't killed immediately arriving at Auschwitz, what was the difference in how you were treated at Gross Rosen?
Better than Auschwitz. Auschwitz was first of all, Auschwitz has two camps, Auschwitz and Birkenau.
Mm-hmm.
Auschwitz was also a working camp where they send out people to work, but Birkenau was an extermination camp. There were the gas chambers and the crematoriums. And I was sent actually not to Auschwitz, but to Birkenau. And with great effort and luck, I was able to be picked, me and my brother, to go to Gross Rosen camp, but this was actually a working camp, what is in better condition than Birkenau.
When you say you and your brother were lucky enough to be picked, can you tell us what happened that stopped your being sent to the gas chambers?
First of all, they probably saw there is some value in our effort, that sometimes we can still be able to do something, do some work for them.
To work. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's what they are, to squeeze out all the, what you have to remember, this was already almost the end of the war, and they were short of people.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to use as much as they could from us, and and so they, we found out in the camp from people what we found, what came there earlier transport from the ghetto to Birkenau.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's men, civilian men, come with a doctor, and they pick up people to go to work, to take them out in the camp. We realized after being there that if we're going to stay there in Birkenau, it's a sure death, because we saw people dying every day around us. So we, with an effort, we pushed ourselves in to, we came to the place where they picked these people, the people to take out to work. So we were able to manage because everybody wants to get out from there. So to be, managed to be picked. This is a part of the luck and miracles that happen on each phase of the year in the camps.
I don't think anyone can fully or even partially understand what you experienced unless they experienced it also. And I think what I'm trying to do here is to get a sense, not just for the audience but for myself, of what it was like in Birkenau. You mentioned a second ago that there was so much death around you. Can you just, I just don't know, Philip, how you were able to get up every morning and keep yourself alive.
Well, it's we tried our best to do everything possible to survive and to adjust to the conditions. If we would have stayed a little longer, we wouldn't have survived because the conditions in the ghetto was better than over there, so we will still have some strength in us. And the few weeks we will stay there, we could see we are fading, that our strength will go down and down, and this will be happen to us what happened to people were there before us. Every morning they drove us out, and it was cold in the morning. We were standing outside in the cold, waiting for the counting. It's called the roll call appeal. And then we stayed all day. They didn't let us back in. And it was raining, and we stayed in the mud. And the rations, the soup was watery, and there was nothing much to eat. So gradually, the people there died. And those, me and my brother, were happy and lucky to get out of there and to be sent to work.
What was, how were you awakened in the morning?
Well, they came in with, the couples came in with their sticks and dogs, and they say, out, arouse, 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 and we had to rush, and we pushed and shoveled, and they hit us over the head and all over the place. And those people were the, sickly already, and they stayed behind, and they were gone, whatever, they didn't finish them off, and they just died. And everybody stampeded to get out as soon as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then even they were out already to stand in line, you know, and they had to stay straight, and they pushed us and abused us. They treat us worse than animals.
When they roused you in the morning, were you allowed to use a latrine? Were you given any sort of a breakfast?
No, this was later. This was later then you had to have permission. I mean, you have to beg permission to get out of the line, to go to the latrine. There was a huge latrines there. And later, after that, they gave you the portion, the soup for the day.
You were served just that breakfast soup?
A soup and a piece of bread. I don't know what it was made from. It tasted like sawdust. It was hard and black-looking like bread. Mm-hmm. And
what did they give you this soup in? Did each of you have a cup?
No, it was like a dish.
Mm-hmm.
Metal dish with no spoon, and we just had to be lucky that we had some potato or some vegetable in it. We hoped that and prayed that we had some nourishment in that soup.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to dig it out with our hands, dirty hands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The sanitary was just... it's unimaginable. I mean, it's hard to... normal people cannot understand conditions like that. I mean, it's it cannot be described. And another thing, usually you tell stories, you say a little bit more, you exaggerate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And the cases, what I went through, and it's just the opposite. You just cannot tell the whole truth. I mean, it's a shame for human beings, mm-hmm. you know, to speak it, that human beings can do things to one another.
Now, you said that even you were 21 when you got to Auschwitz, is that right?
No, 20.
20.
I became 21 in 1945, in March.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, but you had mentioned last week that even when you approached Auschwitz, it was hard to believe what was going on, that this was an extermination camp, a death camp, and the crematoria was actually there to dispose of people who had been executed. And we have to break here, Philip. What I would like you to answer when we come back, if you can,
yeah.
is how you were able to maintain sanity. When I read Elie Wiesel's book, Night, when he cursed God, when he realized what was going on with the with the dead Jewish children, and I just want you to address that when we come back. We're talking with Philip Markowitz, who is the author of My Three Lives. Stay with us.
It's happening again. It's happening again.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the civil rights movement. And now we're trying to develop a silver rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
We'll be right back.
man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. We're talking with Philip Markowitz, who is a Polish-American who also happens to be Jewish, who survived the Holocaust. Has written a book that is going to be out possibly by the end of the summer or end of this year, titled My Three Lives. Philip, that question that I, if you can't answer, how was it possible? I don't think this is anything that we can understand unless we have gone through something very similar. I'll give you a very quick example. Within the past year and a half, I lost four family members. And you know, a couple of were old and died, a couple were young and passed away, but it was a shock. It was just a shock. How do you deal with the kind of death that you had to deal with in a situation that is designed to commit death?
Well, nobody should be tested about that. And the drive to survive, I wanted to survive to see maybe I can find my members of my family, my mother, my sister, and I didn't know what happened to them. And also, like you mentioned about Elie Wiesel, that he was angry. Of course, they were all angry, but the anger was also, I was angry at the leaders what led to this Holocaust. The war and all these, that actually, he was, like you said, Elie Wiesel was mad at God, but actually, he also said, that where was men? Men had to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these things, what happens here, men are doing it. So it was men's choice to, we have freedom of to choose, free will. And the leaders at that time, between the two world wars, they chose to wage wars. And so that was the tragedy of the Second World War and the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm. As a Jew, how could you bear witness to what you were forced to bear witness to? I realized that there were other people exterminated in the Nazi death camps, but the 6 million, the 7 million... Jews who were deliberately and systematically rounded up, transported and executed. This is the part, Philip, that is just beyond my ability to even think about sometimes. How did you survive knowing that this demonic attempt to eliminate European Jewry was going on, and it was directed at you?
Well, the Jewish tradition is the main important thing in this world is life. As you know, the greeting of L'chaim to life.
Right, right.
The life is the most important thing, and Jewish people suffered all the history through the history, but it wasn't, of course, it wasn't as massive and as such a degree as the Holocaust, what lost so many people. But there is no other choice. We have to repair the world, Tikkun Olam, to repair the world. We have to make the world better. We have to fight for it. And there's only one world. There's no other world. And that's the reason I was brought up very Orthodox in the Hasidic world. And the meaning of the prayer after our death is the Kaddish. And this is all to encourage people, no matter what, to continue and survive and fight for a better world. And that is the main thing. It's true. It's powerful. I mean, it's strong to continue, but this is no other choice. We have no other choice.
As an Orthodox Jew, how did you maintain a belief in God, a respect for the Jewish God, knowing what was going on, when it finally occurred to you that this was an attempt to eliminate all Jews? How were you able to square that with your belief in God?
Well, let me tell you, the story with my father, I witnessed, I was the only one in the room, in that little room in the ghetto when my father passed away. He was an Orthodox rabbi. And this happened actually about this time of the year, in February, and in 1942. And I remember vividly, at that time, the Germans were actually knocking at the doors of Leningrad and Moscow. They had all Europe. And in the ghetto at that time was pessimism. And we thought that actually that his dream, Hitler's dream, to make a 1,000-year Reich, he will be able to do it.
Philip, please, I'm so sorry. I've got to stop here again. Let's take this break.
Yes, I'll keep my talk and I'll continue.
If you don't mind.
Sure.
I get you started describing this tremendous, powerful scene, and then I tell you we have to take a break. But
okay.
Wait. Just wait right there. We're talking with Philip Markowitz. We'll be right back.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio. This is the Nation Minute on Air America Radio.
Right now, the Senate Judiciary Committee is debating immigration reform for the first time in over two decades. What's needed is a comprehensive immigration bill that is compassionate and realistic, one that will humanely address the plight of undocumented workers, justly provide opportunities for permanent status, and bolster America's national security. But as long as the rational voices are being drowned out by the fear-mongers who want to build a wall across the Mexican border, this ain't going to happen. Yet a provision called the DREAM Act could be added to the bill. This would enable undocumented immigrants who graduate from America's high schools to receive federal aid, scholarships, and in-state tuition rates. Currently, 65,000 undocumented students who graduate each year are ineligible for assistance, and often must forego college, work menial jobs, and more or less abandon their American dreams. Many of these students have lived in America for the majority of their lives. It's beyond time for this dream to come true. I'm Sam Grimefelsen for Air America Radio. For more, check out thenation.com.
Jen, what's up?
Hey, how'd you know I was having a party?
Everyone knows you're having a party.
Yeah, pretty crazy, isn't it?
Totally.
Hey, I'm gonna smoke up. Wanna get high? Here, you'll like this.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
At Borders, we believe readers should never be stuck without something good to read.
What are you reading?
Soda can.
Like it?
I've read it before.
Yeah, me too. I found it rather predictable. Carbonated water, aspartame.
I like the part about the phenylketonuric, though. Mm. Sounds so ominous.
You'll always have something great to read with Borders Rewards. Joining is free. Earn rewards every time you shop. See store for details.
What do you think the author meant by canned under the authority of?
Oh, that part did seem to come out of nowhere.
That's what I thought.
Join Borders Rewards. Make reading even more rewarding.
Crowley, defeat for Custer Battles. A federal jury has ordered military contractor Custer Battles to pay nearly $10 million in damages and penalties for defrauding the government on its work in Iraq. The jury's decision followed a three-week trial featuring charges that Custer Battles used fake invoices, forgery, and shell companies in the Cayman Islands to run up millions of dollars in profits. The focus of the case was a $3 million advance that Custer Battles got from the Coalition Provisional Authority, the U.S.-led agency that ran Iraq after the war, to build three camps to distribute Iraq's new currency. Under federal law, the government can be awarded triple the amount of alleged fraud. The defense attorney said his client's company did nothing wrong. Dubai Ports World appears to be throwing in the towel. The company owned by the government of Dubai says it plans to transfer the operations that it's buying at six U.S. ports to a U.S. entity. House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Peter King, a leading Republican critic of the deal, praised the decision but says he needs to see the specifics. It's unclear how the company will handle this divestiture. The company says doing so with the understanding that it will not suffer economic loss. This move came after congressional Republicans warned George Bush both the House and Senate were about to block the controversial ports deal. Demonstrators on both sides of the abortion debate rallied in South Dakota. More than 200 abortion rights supporters waved signs in front of the federal courthouse in Sioux Falls. Across the street, about three dozen abortion opponents prayed and held up signs of their own. They were responding to their state's enactment of a law that would ban nearly all abortions. Planned Parenthood, which operates the only clinic in South Dakota which performs abortions, also staged rallies in about 30 other cities around the country. About 80 people turned out in Bradenton, Florida. 90 people showed up in Philadelphia. 75 people brought their protest to the Supreme Court building in Washington. Meanwhile, Tennessee lawmakers moving a little closer to a constitutional change in abortion. The state Senate passed a proposal to remove from the Tennessee state constitutional law any guarantees to a woman's abortion right. Tennessee's Supreme Court has ruled the Tennessee Constitution grants women greater protections in abortion than does the U.S. Constitution. The measure has to be presented to voters after the General Assembly approves it twice. This is Air America Radio News.
It's about, welcome back. It's about 6:30 past the hour. Malloy here on Air America Radio. We're going to pick up our conversation again with Philip Markowitz, who is a Polish-American, a Jewish, who survived the Holocaust, who lost many family members. He has a book coming out, and I don't mean to be very quick and cavalier with those comments, but I want to get back to Philip's story. He has a book coming out entitled My Three Lives. It'll be out sometime towards the end of this year. It is about his experiences in Poland, his experiences as a victim of the Nazi Holocaust, and then his experiences in this country. Now, Philip, right before the break, we were talking about my question to you, I believe, was how you managed as an Orthodox Jew to maintain your relationship with your God in light of the fact that it appeared that there was an effort, certainly if not sanctioned by God, you must have felt that God was turning the other way as millions of Jews were being executed and murdered. And you told me that you were in the ghetto in Lodz when your father died, and I believe that's and he was talking with you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, when he was a true believer, and he believed that no matter how strong the Nazis in Germany were at that time when he passed away, that eventually good will conquer evil. There's no way he will succeed.
He believed that as he was starving to death?
Yeah, right. And the Jewish belief is that humans have a free choice. And we have not to blame God for that. We have to blame humanity for choosing the wrong way. If it's a free choice, that means God will do for us what we choose, bad or good. And so this is nothing to blame God for. It is to blame that we didn't do the right thing. We didn't fight Hitler before he came to power and after he came to power. And there's a lot of things to talk about the period between the First and the Second World War, how it all happened.
Mm-hmm.
And historians make it clear all the things what humanity did, the biggest mistakes, the appeasement and all those things. So going back to what the original question is, why we survived is just to hope that eventually we will survive and work for a better world that never shouldn't happen again. So this is my answer to that.
Mm. Well, I certainly respect your answer. It's almost beyond my ability, though. Well, I shouldn't say almost. It is truly, Philip, I have to say, beyond my ability to be able to plug into that, to be able to say, ah, I understand what you're saying, because I don't. That sort of faith is not something that I have developed, I guess. It's astonishing to me. I have deep respect for it. But to know that millions of people are being murdered because of their belief, and to feel, I think my feeling would have been similar to Elie Wiesel's feeling when he raised a fist to heaven and declared, as I think he was, 15, when he, 16 years old, he was watching the corpses of the Jewish children being burned in an open pit. And raised his fist to the heavens and said that he could no longer accept that any sort of God could possibly sanction this. And if sanctioning it meant turning away or saying, well, you have free choice or whatever. So I can certainly hear you, Philip, and I can hear your father's voice telling you what he told you. I cannot, it's beyond my ability to understand how you were able to do that.
Well, it is actually, it's a deeper philosophy in that. To deny God is to deny life or the whole existence. There is no such a thing you can deny. God is there. God is all over the world. His glory is all over the world. You look at the stars and the heavens and all around you. His glory is there. God is in the human beings. God was at the fighting forces of the Allies, fighting the evil. And there is no such a thing as denying God. You cannot deny God. This is a fact, and this is existence. The whole world is full of His glory. And what the Nazis could not do with me in the camps, they imprisoned me physically, but they could not imprison my mind. When I was already a scholar and studied in the yeshiva and met my father, the rabbi, and I knew a deeper meaning of God than there's the common concept that there's a God sitting up there in heaven with a beard or with imposed strength. This is a low level of understanding. I was in a deeper understanding of what means the meaning of God.
Mm. Well, I can do nothing but respect that powerful of a belief system, Philip, even though the circumstances of my existence in my life dictates or allows me to choose, I should say, not to share that belief. I can certainly understand on an intellectual level your deep faith, and I have tremendous respect for that. Whatever it was that sustained you and sustained so many Holocaust survivors while death was just thick, I have deep respect for. I want to ask you, unless there was something else you wanted to say about that, I wanted to ask you then, the next section of your book is about your journey to Flossenbürg from Gross Rosen, I believe.
Yes.
And Flossenbürg was another concentration camp or a death camp?
Death camp.
A death camp.
A death camp. And Flossenbürg was the experience of Flossenbürg. It was horrible. Worse than actually experience over there. Worse things than in Auschwitz. First, the journey to in the train. They packed us in like it's impossible. So many people can go in one wagon, and we were actually laying on one on top of the other, and the conditions were horrible, and more than half passed out, died in the few days. I don't even know how long it took to get to Flossenbürg, and the conditions were just horrible. And then the conditions over there was also such, it's hard to describe. The human bodies were piled up naked up to the, you know, up to 6 feet high, waiting in the morning to be taken away in wagons to be cremated. And at that time over there, I also made a decision, maybe in my brother, no matter what we should do, is to get out of that. Otherwise, they wouldn't survive over there. And it took a lot of planning to get out of there.
How long was the train ride from Birkenau to Flossenbürg, or from Gross Rosen to Flossenbürg?
About 3 days.
3 days.
It could have been a few hours, because we were standing on the ramps on the side and letting train go of different kinds of military equipment and all this.
And the people inside the trains, were you given anything, water, food,
well,
anything?
Well, they gave us... they opened up and they throw in the portions of bread and some drink, very little, to sustain us. And like I mentioned it, I think, at the last segment, last week, is I was fortunate to be on the bottom floor near the walls.
Mm-hmm.
What I actually patiently enlarged a hole in the bottom to be able to stretch out my hand, and a person stopped at a train when we were standing there and let trains go by, and then a passenger train stopped right away like a miracle. The door, the exit door from the train, people walked down right in front of me, and I put my hand out to the wall, to the train, and a person put in a sandwich in my hand. And that sandwich helped me and my brother survive that train ride. Without that sandwich, I wouldn't have survived. And all the true history, all this time in the history of the Second World War, I had these kind of miracles, happening to me, and that's the reason I survived. In the very first time in even the ghetto, when they came, the Germans came in the middle of the night to take out the people in the nightgowns from the bed. Mm-hmm. We were on the fourth floor, and a light bulb was out in the corridor, and when they came out to take the people out, they thought they are on the top floor already, and they didn't go up to the fourth floor, and that helped us survive right there.
Oh my goodness, Philip, hold on just a second. Do you mind?
Sure.
All right, we'll come back. We're talking with Philip Markowitz. Stay with us.
Looking for the doctor's cure. Looking at hands for the lines that were, and into every masterpiece of literature.
You're listening to the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.
There are two kinds of bikers. There's the tough, hardcore biker, like Smokey here.
Hey, bro.
And then there's the weekend rider, like Jeff.
Hey, man.
These two bikers couldn't be more different, except for one thing. You both have Geico motorcycle insurance. Because Geico covers most kinds of motorcycles, and they offer money-saving discounts. So, you see, you guys, you have more in common than you thought.
Neat.
For a free rate quote on motorcycle insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
Your host for a Piance Brian's future, it's Mike Malloy.
22 past the hour, we're talking with Philip Markowitz, and we only have a few minutes left in this week's discussion, Philip. I certainly hope you can come back next week. We're talking about the miracles that you feel occurred that saved you and your brother so that you could, among other things, bear witness to what you saw and what you experienced. The image, I have to tell you, the image of you sticking your hand through that boxcar to get a sandwich is one that I'm going to carry with me for quite some time. That is quite a scene, quite a picture to try to imagine. I have a sense of too much more discussion about the death. And someone's going to think that I'm fetishizing your experiences, and I don't mean to do that. There are enough books out there that people can read about this. Let's talk a bit in the few moments that we have left on this week's conversation about liberation that came to you. I believe it came when you are at Lebanon.
Right.
And that was yet another camp that you went to.
No, Lebanon was the end of it. We came to Lebanon. The liberation was there. This was May the 5th.
I see. Well, so Lebanon.
After Ahmad, the end of a march of 2 weeks march.
Oh, this.
Yeah.
The death march that you write about.
Exactly.
And this is where the prisoners were. The Germans were trying to move you away from the approaching Russians. Is that it?
Right.
And people were dying on this march, and again,
that time was already the Americans. We were already on the American side.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
From Gross Rosen to Flossenbürg was from the Russian side because
it
was close to the Czech border. But later we were on the American side.
I see.
Yeah.
We have about 2 minutes left. Can you describe just a bit, Philip? Liberation that came, how it came to you.
Well, after the march was horrible, and I cannot describe it. But the last day, the very last, we supposed to go to at night. We stayed in barns and during the day and marched at night.
Mm-hmm.
So the last day. It was already daylight, and somehow we didn't go to a barn. And an hour later, we saw soldiers taking off their uniforms and they assess and throw away their weapons.
German soldiers.
Germans, yeah, they assess. Mm-hmm. They assess what our guards.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of them took off their machine guns and tried to machine us down, and they did. So I told to my brother, Henry, I said, look, there was these on the roads were these ditches.
Mm-hmm.
And on the farms, you know, ditches. And I said to Henry, as soon as you hear the machine gun going off, just drop dead and fall down into the ditch. You pretend that we are dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's what did. As soon as you hear, then we fall right into the ditch. Some water was in there too. And we was laid there in the cold water and was waiting till the whole thing died down. And a few minutes later, 10 minutes later, everything was all quiet. And then we started to crawl out from the ditch, and we saw a farmhouse not too far from there. And we hid there under the steps the farmhouse had the step to go up to higher onto the door,
mm-hmm.
in the side. So we hid there. We didn't know if the war was over, what happened, and we were so exhausted from walking all night. So, and we were wet. We hugged each other under the stairs, and we fell asleep. And then till about night, then German, I heard screaming. The door opened up, and the farmer screamed to the German, "Over here, over here!" And I thought, "Uh-oh, here again, we will be caught again." And but the German had a white armband around it, and he talked to us so gentle, and it was such a feeling. And I didn't hear this from a German talk for years.
Well, Philip, Philip, if I may, let's leave it right there. The image of you and your brother falling asleep with your arms around each other, I think, is about the most peaceful image we can have at this moment. We'll pick up the discussion next Thursday. Philip, okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate your
witness. You're welcome, and thank you for having me on the show.
Take care. Our guest is Philip Markowitz. We'll pick up the conversation next Thursday. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
You're listening to The Mike Molloy Show on Air America Radio.
Clarence Young, a scientist at GlaxoSmithKline, on how far he's willing to go.
Finding a new antibiotic is about as easy as catching one particular snowflake. It takes about 15 years to find one that works. Then, as soon as the bacteria develop resistance, we're right back where we started. But everyone benefits from antibiotics, so the war never stops. At GSK, quitting's just not an option.
GlaxoSmithKline. Today's medicines, tomorrow's miracles.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement. And now we're trying to develop a civil rights movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at OperationHope.org.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, 3 buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. 2 little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit SearchDogFoundation.org. Made possible by SearchDog USA.
soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy. Feel it. And
the distance. Looking all black. Stretch to the point of no turning back. Flight of fancy on the windswept.
It's about 25 before the hour. You know, in listening to Philip Markowitz's story, Holocaust survivor, and then realized that, according to this press release somebody sent me, March 27th and 28th in Washington, D.C. at the Omni Shoreham Hotel will be the first The War on Christians conference. Yeah. And in their press release, they say, the only way we can stop the vicious and escalating assaults on Christians is by exposing, confronting, and countering the forces of hatred and bigotry, which are Hollywood, the New York Times, the network news shows, the ACLU, the Anti-Defamation League, and the rest of the anti-Christian wrecking crew. These people are literally insane. And they're prominent speakers. We mentioned this beginning of the program tonight, but the prominent speakers are Alan Keyes, Gary Bauer, Senator John Cornyn, Phyllis Schlafly, Sam Brownback, and Tom DeLay. It's incredible, isn't it? The War on Christians Conference. The person putting this together, someone named Rick Scarborough, who's the president of Vision America. Vision America. I urge you to join us at the War on Christians Conference, which will be a milestone on the road to mobilizing the values vote for the 2006 election. Pissants. Tiny little irritating pissants. And then you listen to a story like Philip Markowitz's, and not trying to bum anybody out with having Mr. Markowitz on as a guest last week, this week, and next week for an hour of listening to his story. Not intending to bum you out at all. At some point in our discussion, probably next week, I think Philip Markowitz is going to reassure me and you that he doesn't see the rise of the sort of fascism in this country that existed in Germany in the 20s and 30s and brought about World War II and the Holocaust. World War II, of course, resulting in 50 million people dying globally. I believe that's what Mr. Markowitz is going to share with us. So my purpose in having him on the program is obvious, I believe. All right. If you want to get online now, we're going to get back to some of the topics we had planned for this evening. The number here is 866-303-2270. It appears that Karl Rove's scam about the Dubai ports deal went off without a hitch. Perfect. Perfectly planned, perfectly executed, and the Republicans now can take tremendous claim to the hometown fools for the November 6th election about how they stood up, even to their own president, in order to protect America. It's on the one hand, it's fascinating to watch Karl Rove work. On the other hand, it's infuriating. But while all this was going on, with the Dubai ports crap, the Republicans have decided to allow spying without warrants. According to the Times, the plan by Senate Republicans to step up oversight of the NSA's domestic surveillance program would also give legislative sanction for the first time to long-term eavesdropping on Americans without a court warrant. It's happening. Civil liberties advocates called the proposed oversight inadequate and the licensing of eavesdropping without warrants unnecessary and unwise. The Republican proposal appeared likely to win approval from the full Senate despite Democratic opposition. This Republican proposal will give congressional approval to the eavesdropping program, much as it was secretly authorized by Bush over the past 4 years. So that was going on. By the way, what that includes, the existing FISA statute permits the government to eavesdrop for 72 hours before getting a warrant, or for 15 days if there's a declaration of war without a warrant. The Republican proposal will permit eavesdropping with no warrant for 45 days, with no limit on how many times that 45-day period can be renewed. This is a joke. I mean, it really is a joke. Now, the Republicans will go back to their mouth-breathing constituents and say, well, we protected you now, and we protected the security of the nation. The National Security Agency now has to get permission. You see what these sons of bitches are doing and what they... It's incredible. A law professor at Syracuse University said, quote, aside from the civil liberties dimension, there's an invitation here to the president to go on indefinitely with warrantless surveillance. Yeah. And the head of the ACLU's Washington legislative office said it was, quote, profoundly disappointing to see lawmakers willing to lower the bar to allow Bush vast powers to spy on Americans. It's astonishing. So that was going on. You know what else was going on? The House approved a bill yesterday that will wipe out state laws on safety labeling of food. This overrides, for example, rules passed by California voters 2 decades ago that require food producers in that state to warn consumers about, for example, cancer-causing ingredients. The vote was a victory for the food industry, which has contributed millions upon millions of dollars to these Republican campaigns. Consumer groups, of course, and state regulators have warned that the bill will undo more than 200 state laws, including California's Proposition 65, that protect public health. Henry Waxman, Democrat Los Angeles, chief critic of the measure, said, quote, the purpose of this legislation is to keep the public from knowing about the harm they may be exposed to in food. Several critics argued that the bill was rushed through the House without complete hearings as a favor to a specific industry. At the same time, the members are talking about the evils of lobbying. Under the bill, any state that wants to keep its own tougher standards for food labeling will have to ask for approval from the Federal Food and Drug Administration. Do you understand this, truth seeker? Remember when the Republican lying sons of bitches tried to tell everybody they were for small government? They're in your womb. They're in your jock strap. They're in your food. They're in your brain. They're in your child's schoolroom. These vermin are everywhere. This measure was approved after debate in which House Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi of San Francisco accused the Republican majority of, quote, shredding the food safety net that we have built in this country, end quote. The measure passed 283 to 139 with the support, it says here, of many Democrats. Now, just in California, this new legislation will eliminate information that has to be put on warning labels, like, for example, bottled water companies, because there was laws about this stuff. There were laws about this stuff. And we're just using California. Bottled water companies have cut arsenic levels. Bakers have taken potassium bromate, a potential carcinogen, out of many breads and donuts and other bakery goods. All that's gone now. All that's gone. Representative Jim Cooper, Democrat from Tennessee, who co-sponsored the bill but opposed it on the floor, saying it needed thorough public debate. Yeah, a Democrat said, this is the job of Congress, to hold hearings, to introduce facts, to listen to debate. Oh, please. He went on to say, I'm wondering right now what the food industry is afraid of. Why are they trying to ram this piece of legislation through the House? Am I reading this wrong? It says here, Jim Cooper, Democrat of Tennessee, who co-sponsored the bill but opposed it on the floor, saying it needed a thorough public debate. Well, and now you're bitching, Mr. Cooper? Isn't that typically a Democrat? Huh? He sponsors the legislation, and then when it passes, he says, oh, wait a minute. This vote yesterday, was it says here, was a sign of the tremendous power of the food industry in Congress. Corporations and trade groups that joined the National Uniformity for Food Coalition, which backed the bill, have contributed more than $3 million to members in this election cycle and $31 million since 1998. The industry also has many top lobbyists pushing the bill, including White House Chief of Staff Andrew Card's brother, Brad Card. The House defeated an amendment by Representative Lois Capps of Santa Barbara, California, that would have let states keep laws that warn consumers about exposure to substances that could cause cancer, birth defects, reproductive health problems, or allergic reactions associated with sulfites. No, it all comes off. The House also rejected a proposal to allow states to label meat that has been treated with carbon monoxide. Yeah, they use that to make meat have a healthy pink look for longer. That means that the stores can sell potentially rotten meat, meat that's already spoiled, but it looks nice and pink. This is what these people are doing. How do you feel tonight, Trucey? Oh, that's right. Dubai loses their deal to run American ports. Oh, thank goodness.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Some of the best minds in the automotive industry, using some of the most sophisticated design facilities. Engineers from Ford Motor Company are working together on a common mission, creating safer cars for our families and our children. Ford is renewing its commitment to driving American innovation. At the core of that effort is your safety, because every single life saved is worth it. Ford, driving American innovation.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet.
That's hard.
You do regular exercise.
That's harder.
You even get a colonoscopy.
The hardest.
If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent one out of three heart attacks.
Now that's simple.
Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. I love the way you walk, and I love the way you talk. When you walk,
if you're not outraged, then you're just not paying attention. It's Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Out off of my feet.
It's about 10 before the hour. Damn, not enough time tonight. Coming up next hour, we're going to share with you, I think it'll be safe. We're going to read this thing written by a blogger. It's My Heartfelt Apology to South Dakota. You got to hear this. It's going to push the envelope a little bit, I think, on an over-the-air radio program here, but we're going to do it anyway. Not that there's, you know, I think the F word is only in it a couple of times, and we'll be cool about that. But this is very intense, and it was sent to me, and I read it, and I thought, you know, this is so intense, it's got to be read on the air, and so we're going to do that. Coming up next hour. Don't forget to register for the conference concerning the war on Christians. The other thing that went on while we were all focused on the Dubai ports thing, the FBI, I love this sentence. The Federal Bureau of Investigation found apparent violations of its own wiretapping and other intelligence gathering procedures more than 100 times in the last 2 years, and problems appear to have grown more frequent in some crucial respects, a Justice Department report released Wednesday said. Yeah, what this report shows, you know, forget about the NSA. What do we, you know, forget about the Patriot Act. It's over. Anybody wants to get inside your bloomers, they're in. They're in. Your email, they're in. Everything, thanks to this son of a bitch in the White House, is now up for grabs. The FBI, the Inspector General of the FBI, finds... Uh-oh, well, my goodness, what is this? And it's not just 100. In one instance, the FBI received the full content of 181 telephone calls as part of an intelligence investigation, instead of merely the billing and toll records as authorized. In a handful of cases, the FBI conducted physical searches that have not been authorized. You know what the newest thing is? The newest thing is to hold people as material witnesses with no bond, nothing. If they suspect that you have done something or you know something about someone who's done something, you can now be jailed indefinitely as a material witness. The Office of Professional Responsibility, a Justice Department unit that reviews ethics charges against department lawyers, has opened inquiries related to the detention of 21 people held as material witnesses in terror investigations. Civil rights advocates assert that the Justice Department has abused the material witness statute by holding suspects whom it may not have enough evidence to charge. I'll tell you something, Truth Seeker. You know, I said months and months and months and months ago that if you're very quiet and sit down and don't make any noise, you know, American fascism is probably won't bother you. If you raise your head up, if you put a bumper sticker on your car that says you listen to Air America, if you talk to your class, your students about peace, or the fact that George Bush, in some of his mad utterings, are very similar to those of Adolf Hitler, then you're in trouble. Then you're in trouble. All right, I need to take a deep breath, and Jerky's on the line here, calling in from God knows where. Jerky, welcome to the program. Thanks for holding on as long as you have. Hey, Jerky. Jerky. Oh, he's listening to some good music. Put him back on hold, and we'll come back, all right? I don't blame him. He's been waiting for an hour and a half, and we're just about out of time for this segment anyway, aren't we? Ira is calling from New Jersey. Let's talk with Ira. Ira, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mike, for taking the call.
Absolutely.
I know you've been talking about 9/11 semi-frequently on your show. Have you seen the most recent thing from the group started by Steve Jones and Jim Fetzer?
No, I haven't.
It's on 911truth.org. It's a long petition. Covers every aspect of 9/11. The towers, 1-2, World Trade Center 7. Uh-huh. The collapse of the air defenses and
let me say something about that, Ira. I think a lot of people who have not made up their minds yet about the involvement, actively or passively, made it happen or let it happen. I think people need to say, I've already made up my mind.
So have I.
And so to look at further videos, it's just going to bum me out.
It's not a video. It's a petition.
Oh, it's a petition.
It's a petition.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Where is it? What's the website?
www.911truth.org.
Oh, it's 911truth.org, their website. Okay.
Yeah. Your show with Griffin was written up well on that website.
Oh, good. Oh, good. Well, yeah. I'll check it out. And I think people who have doubts ought to look at, and I think 911truth.org, they have links to these various videos, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Some, they can link it up. There's some other sites that have links to the videos and
I think that's what people need to do who either don't care or maybe curious or fence sitters or thinking possibly maybe I hope not should start taking a look at some of these videos that have put together this documentary evidence such as it is and I know a lot of people will look at the video and say well that doesn't change my mind at all we were attacked by 15 terrorists.
You know, it's amazing. Most people, anti-Bush, you know, they call themselves Democrats or just not Democrats.
Yeah. Ira? Did we lose Ira? All right. Ira, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Ira. Looks like the phone booger man got you. Oh, well. We got a break here. We'll be back. Stay with us next hour. We've got this blog I want to read with you, and also this evening's reading from George Orwell's 1984. Plus your phone calls. Stick around. I'm Mike Molloy.
Molloy on Air America Radio.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King in the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org.
America Radio News. I'm Bill Crowley. Defeat for Custer Battles. A federal jury has ordered military contractor Custer Battles to pay nearly $10 million in damages and penalties for defrauding the government on its work in Iraq. The jury's decision followed a three-week trial featuring charges that Custer Battles used fake invoices, forgery, and shell companies in the Cayman Islands to run up millions of dollars in profits. The focus of the case was a $3 million advance that Custer Battles got from the Coalition Provisional Authority, the U.S.-led agency that ran Iraq after the war, to build three camps to distribute Iraq's new currency. Under federal law, the government can be awarded triple the amount of alleged fraud. The defense attorney said his client's company did nothing wrong. Dubai Ports World appears to be throwing in the towel. The company owned by the government of Dubai says it plans to transfer the operations that it's buying at six U.S. ports to a U.S. entity. House Homeland Security Committee Chairman Peter King, a leading Republican critic of the deal, praised the decision but says he needs to see the specifics. It's unclear how the company will handle this divestiture. The company says doing so with the understanding that it will not suffer economic loss. This move came after congressional Republicans warned George Bush both the House and Senate were about to block the controversial ports deal. Demonstrators on both sides of the abortion debate rallied in South Dakota. More than 200 abortion rights supporters waved signs in front of the federal courthouse in Sioux Falls. Across the street, about three dozen abortion opponents prayed and held up signs of their own. They were responding to their state's enactment of a law that would ban nearly all abortions. Planned Parenthood, which operates the only clinic in South Dakota which performs abortions, also staged rallies in about 30 other cities around the country. About 80 people turned out in Bradenton, Florida. 90 people showed up in Philadelphia. 75 people brought their protest to the Supreme Court building in Washington. Meanwhile, Tennessee lawmakers moving a little closer to a constitutional change in abortion. The state Senate passed a proposal to remove from the Tennessee state constitutional law any guarantees to a woman's abortion right. Tennessee's Supreme Court has ruled the Tennessee Constitution grants women greater protections in abortion than does the U.S. Constitution. The measure has to be presented to voters after the General Assembly approves it twice. This is Air America Radio News.
Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. This is Air America. My name is Mike Malloy. Let's go back to the phone calls here real quick and see if we can get Jerky up this time. Our at-large bureau chief. Jerky, are you there?
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. As soon as we cut the music, I'll be able to hear you better. There we go.
Yeah, I was on earlier. I was shouting at you, but apparently...
Hello? Oh, no. Don't let this... Okay. Yeah, here we go again. Jerky, try to call back in, and everybody else is on hold. We'll get to you in a second, I swear. Mike is calling from Elk Grove, California. Mike, welcome to the program. Mike?
Our special truth finders. I thank you so much for that.
I missed the first part of what you said, Mike. Start
no,
over.
I said thanks for having me, and a special greetings to you and Kathy, who are the most skilled at truth finding.
Ah, okay. Well, we'll accept that.
But I really enjoyed your appearance on the Randy Rhoads Show because I find I ask the same questions you do when it comes to conservatives. What is it about conservatism that, you know, why you lean toward the Republican Party? And it's always taxes and small government, which we can just tear them apart on that. And I'm looking forward to the day where you take on the right-wingers, just the right-wingers call, and I just sit back and enjoy the show.
Yeah, we may do that again sometime, although, I you know, it just degenerates into nastiness because most Republicans, if not all, most Bush supporters, if not all, most right-wingers, if not all, have nothing to say. They're sheep. They do what they're told to do, whether it's kill people or vote this way or raise their hands to heaven or, you know, keep women in a state of subservience. I don't know. I'm sick of them. I wish they would leave the country and go somewhere else.
But, you know, on the other story you mentioned about the California, you know, calling from California, Proposition 65, another extension to the piece on Proposition 65, milk safety laws would also be impacted, shellfish safety laws impacted, lead in candy. Now, who do you think consumes a lot of this?
Yeah.
Kids.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Babies.
It's why do Republicans do this? See, they're willing to sell off. They would sell their mothers to a sex romp with Satan for enough money. They
yeah,
would.
This
Republicans will sell anything. They'll sell children. They'll sell themselves. They'll sell their husbands or wives. They'll sell their mothers, their grandparents. They are filthy, filthy, yeah. Filthy.
I'm glad the Sacramento Bee pointed that out because it was approximately $1.2 million. One of the lobby groups, sounded like a special interest, headed by a Cal Dooley, who was a former San Joaquin Valley congressman, who spent $400,000 of his own through the Food Producers Association, the Grocery Manufacturers, and the International Dairy Food Association. They were behind all this.
Yeah.
Just incredible, but
yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I don't know what to say about this madness. I really don't. I just don't. Mike, thanks for checking in. All right.
Hey, God bless you. Take care, Mike.
All right, take care of yourself. I can't get my mind around it. Republicans will sell their own mothers into whoredom. They'll sell their daughters. I'm talking about male Republicans. Female Republicans are just beyond hope. Just beyond hope. They'll sell their mothers into whoredom. They'll sell their daughters to Satan. They'll do anything for money. I've never seen anything like this crop of Republicans. It doesn't matter. All right, this is a blog. My heartfelt apology to South Dakota. This is what the writer writes. Seems I owe the Christo-fascist freaks in South Dakota an apology. I said in a previous post titled The Jesus Beam that the religious freaks who find it necessary to control every minute detail of a woman's life did not allow a stipulation for an abortion in the case of rape or incest in their new abortion ban. Here, I was wrong. Seems they do, in fact, allow for an abortion under a specific set of completely acceptable circumstances. South Dakota State Senator Bill Napoli described a completely legitimate situation in which an exception to South Dakota's ban on abortion may be allowed. Napoli said, quote, "A real-life description to me would be a rape victim, brutally raped, savaged. The girl was a virgin, She was religious. She planned on saving her virginity until she was married. She was brutalized and raped, sodomized, as bad as you can possibly make it, and is impregnated. I mean, that girl could be so messed up physically and psychologically that carrying that child could very well threaten her life. End quote. See, I was wrong. I apologize. Excuse me now while I throw the hell up. Let's look at what this zealot just said. First, aren't all rapes brutal and savage? Or is there some kind of compassionate rape that I haven't become aware of? Second, the poor woman must be religious. For some reason, I'm thinking she must be of a particular religion, Christian, in order for this exception to be approved. Jews, atheists, Muslims, Buddhists, etc., etc., are heathens and deserve to be raped. Third, she must be a virgin? This is obviously because any slut who dared have sex in the past obviously wasn't raped. She probably enjoyed it. And more likely than not, she deserved it. She was probably asking for it. There is nothing hotter than some violent unknown assailant forcing his penis into you. No, this is fun. Fourth, vaginal rape isn't bad enough. No, plain old boring vaginal rape is not deserving of an abortion. Nope, it's not bad enough. Most women can handle the old vaginal rape thing just fine. Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and start all over again. According to Napoli, she must also be sodomized and brutalized in some other way. Now, who will decide how badly she was brutalized, raped, and sodomized? Will each woman have to appear before a rape determination commission, which will decide if the rape was serious enough to be justified as a rape? Will they base their decision on a point system? You know, 1 point for bruises, 3 points for vaginal tearing, 5 points for a damaged spleen, 10 points for strangle marks around the girl's neck, 50 points for bleeding from the rectum, and 100 points for permanent brain damage? What will be the required point total in order for this girl's ordeal to rate as an actual rape? All the others, I suppose, will be rated as rough sex. The girl will be marked with a scarlet S for slut and sent on her merry way. But the last sentence of Mr. Napoli's declaration really blows my mind. I guess only a religious virgin would be so messed up by being raped and subsequently impregnated by her assailant that it could, quote, very well threaten her life, end quote. Me? Oh, I'd like to get raped. Yes, I would. In fact, I can't wait. I don't think it would mess me up at all. I might kind of like it. F you! Do you people see what we're dealing with here? These religious freaks are completely sick in the head. There is no possible way a normal human being could read the above quotation and interpret it any other way. These are Nazis whose sole goal in life is to subjugate women to their beliefs. It is my goal to see these people driven into the sea. Is this what is to become of America? Are the people of this country to be governed to have their lives run by these insane religious zombies? Stay the hell away from me. I'm serious. Stay the hell away from me. Subjugate your own family and your own diseased followers. I want nothing of it. I swear to spend my remaining time on this planet doing everything I can to destroy you freaks. I swear to it. Is this fascist Napoli married? Does he have children? How would he react if one of his daughters or his wife was raped? Would he tell them to suck it up as he is telling every other woman in this country? I doubt it. Where can I hire a rapist? I'm sorry. That wasn't very Christian of me, was it? Keep your rosaries off my ovaries.
Hoping it will break. But you know what? I don't think there's one of them that leads a life free of no space. La-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Clarence Young, a scientist at GlaxoSmithKline, on how far he's willing to go.
Finding a new antibiotic is about as easy as catching one particular snowflake. It takes about 15 years to find one that works. Then, as soon as the bacteria develop resistance, we're right back where we started. But everyone benefits from antibiotics, so the war never stops. At GSK, quitting's just not an option.
GlaxoSmithKline. Today's medicines, tomorrow's miracles.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, three buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. Two little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4K9-HERO or visit searchdogfoundation.org. Made possible by Searchdog USA.
End your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
Yeah. All right. Now, I know a lot of you are going to want a copy of this blog I just got way too far into. You can find it. Just go to comearmageddon.blogspot.com. and you'll find it there. comearmageddon.blogspot.com.
What's wrong? A sodomite got your tongue there?
Yeah. comearmageddon.blogspot.com. The person who writes that that blog site has some incredible stuff up. You've heard me mention it a couple of times before. Check it out. All right. Well, I guess we're just so many folks here. We're not going to get Jerky back. All right, Jerky, if you're still listening, damn, I don't know, man. Everything went dead, but we'll talk again. Dick is calling from Ohio. Dick, welcome to the program.
Mark, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing fine, Dick. How are you?
Hey, always a pleasure to talk to you, sir. You're a great American.
So are you, Dick.
Yeah, I've last talked to you in Cincinnati. I want to make a point, being from Ohio, this port, about the port, you know, the Army Corps of Engineers.
Yeah, yeah.
And the Coast Guard. I say we support these people because they do a hell of a great job on the waterways. And, you know, one of the ports up in Lorraine, they closed up, but I'm telling you, Ohio, I got a list of my legislatures. I'm going to write, we need help in Ohio. We're just failing down the river, you know?
Oh, yeah. Ohio is has become fascistan.
Yes.
You folks in Ohio need to get rid of those corrupt, filthy Republicans that are destroying your state.
Oh, isn't that the truth, though?
It's
How
awful.
Can somebody, it's... somebody, you know, it was in the paper, a coin scandal. And all the in these libraries, everything around the area I work in is just going, you know, they've closed them up, and you see the cuts in the unemployment, and it's just, I agree with you. I think we're just, they need, maybe Governor Taft will meet President Bush. I just hope they don't cut a piece of the pie, you know what I mean?
Well, they ought to get together in the nearest federal prison camp as soon as possible, along with Bob Nye. Is that the guy's name, Nye?
Nye, yeah.
And Mike DeWine, and you just, there's so many of them in Ohio now. I don't know, Ohio is my home state. I don't know what happened.
Where are you from?
Toledo.
Oh, great. Yeah, and you know, they closed. I went up there with my friend. They closed the most important area up there. It was Portside.
Yeah.
They let that go to hell, Mike.
Well, there's nobody goes to downtown Toledo anymore. Like so many cities in the old industrial Midwest, they've tried and tried and tried to stay alive, and slowly they're dying.
Right.
And in the meantime, you have Republicans in control who are further butchering the state of Ohio, butchering anything they can get their hands on. Republicans will kill it all. They'll kill everything,
yep.
and then they'll burn wherever the thing they just killed used to live.
Right.
And then after the burning stops, they'll salt the earth where the thing was burning that used to live there. And after they salt the earth, then they'll dig deep holes. It's just Republicans are evil. They're the spawn of Satan. Every single one of them comes right out of Satan's scrotum, and something ought to be done in the state of Ohio and in the entire United States to stop these monsters. They are ripping the country to pieces.
You know, one thing I'm proud of, I play in the band, and we do patriotic songs at the end, you know, our little group, and I just love it, and it's great. And I'll tell you what, a lot of my friends, my aunt hears me a lot. I love Air America Radio, and I might send your producer up there. They did a feature story on me of Addict to Radio Talk. Wasn't that nice?
That's great. Dick, do it. Send us something. I got to go. Thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate it. It's a good man, Dick. Bruce is calling from California. Bruce, welcome to the program. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, listen, I was listening to Ed Schultz today, and he was talking about the Air America station in Phoenix.
Uh-huh.
And
Air America station.
Yeah, former Air America station. And he was really, it was amazing. He was really degrading. He was talking about using bake sale tactics.
Ed Schultz is a Republican. I don't know why nobody understands that. He's a conservative. He's running a gorgeous, beautiful scam by presenting himself as some kind of a moderate liberal. Anybody who buys into the scam, if Ed Schultz says something that surprises them, I think they deserve the surprise. The guy is a conservative. He's a Bush follower. I don't know what the disagreement. I don't know why there's any question about that.
Well, he also suggested that he would be willing to put his money up and be a part owner of the station.
Yeah, well, you can see that the people trying to do this in Phoenix are just beating the door down to get to him. I've said before, I think he's a phony and a blowhard, and I stand by that. But I also believe that, you know, he was a conservative. He was a Republican for a long time, and all of a sudden he says, no, changed my mind. I'm a liberal Democrat. Yeah, I got your liberal Democrat. Hey, I got to go, Bruce. Thanks for checking in, pal. I appreciate it. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Western accent with a Dixie tongue. She was a red on a logo way. He's what you call the swinging half breed, singing his cow boogie in a stranger's way.
This is the Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Thanks a lot for the ride home. Hey, no problem, man. Just because you're a sophomore doesn't mean I can't talk to you.
Thanks.
Hey, while you're here, want to take a hit of some weed? Some good stuff. Here you go.
This is the moment your guidance can prevent your teen from smoking marijuana. So visit theantidrug.com and learn how to set clear rules about drugs. Parents, the anti-drug. Sponsored by the ONDCP and the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Do you know the power of financial empowerment? Ambassador Andrew Young, humanitarian and educator, has teamed with Operation Hope founder John Bryant to help eradicate poverty through financial literacy education. Mr. Bryant, how is Operation Hope meeting this challenge?
To empower 5 million youth in 5 years in financial literacy.
Ambassador Young, what's your role in financial literacy education?
Well, I came up with Martin Luther King and the Civil Rights Movement, and now we're trying to develop a Silver Rights Movement. Young people in the system of free enterprise and capitalism need to understand money and how it works. It takes an army of volunteers, business leaders, educators, the entire community. We need the community's help.
If you need financial hope, we're here to help you. Call Operation Hope at 877-592-HOPE. That's 877-592-HOPE. Or visit us online at operationhope.org. We'll be right back.
26 before the hour. In the last reading we had from Orwell's 1984, Winston Smith and Julia had just completed meeting once again, having sex once again, this time in a deserted church tower. And that's pretty much where the last chapter ended. We are now on chapter 12, or if you're doing it the other way, part 2, chapter 4. Winston looked round the shabby little room above Mr. Charrington's shop. Beside the window, the enormous bed was made up with ragged blankets and a coverless bolster. The old-fashioned clock with the 12-hour face was ticking away on the mantelpiece. In the corner, on the gate-leg table, the glass paperweight which he had bought on his last visit gleamed softly out of the half-darkness. In the fender was a battered tin oil stove, a saucepan, and two cups provided by Mr. Charrington. Winston lit the burner and set a pan of water to boil. He had brought an envelope full of victory coffee and some saccharin tablets. The clock's hands said 17:20. It was 19:20, really. She was coming at 19:30. Folly, folly, his heart kept saying. Conscious, gratuitous, suicidal folly. Of all the crimes that a party member could commit, this one was the least possible to conceal. Actually, the idea had first floated into his head in the form of a vision of the glass paperweight mirrored by the surface of the gate-leg table. As he had foreseen, Mr. Charrington had made no difficulty about letting the room. He was obviously glad of the few dollars that it would bring him. Nor did he seem shocked or become offensively knowing when it was made clear that Winston wanted the room for the purpose of a love affair. Instead, he looked into the middle distance and spoke in generalities with so delicate an air as to give the impression that he had become partly invisible. Privacy, he said, was a very valuable thing. Everyone wanted a place where they could be alone occasionally. And when they had such a place, it was common courtesy in anyone else who knew of it to keep his knowledge to himself. He even, seeming almost to fade out of existence as he did so, added that there were two entries to the house. One of them through the backyard, which gave on an alley. Under the window, someone was singing. Winston peeped out, secure in the protection of the muslin curtain. The June sun was still high in the sky, and in the sun-filled court below, a monstrous woman, solid as a Norman pillar, with brawny red forearms and a sacking apron strapped about her middle, was stumping to and fro between a washtub and a clothesline, pegging out a series of square white things, which Winston recognized as baby's diapers. Whenever her mouth was not corked with clothes pegs, she was singing in a powerful contralto, "It was only an hopeless fancy! Ah, it passed like an April day, but a look and a word and the dreams they stirred, they have stolen my heart away." The tune had been haunting London for weeks past. It was one of countless similar songs published for the benefit of the proles by a subsection of the music department. The words of these songs were composed without any human intervention whatever on an instrument known as a versificator. But the woman sang so tunefully as to turn the dreadful rubbish into an almost pleasant sound. He could hear the woman singing and the scrape of her shoes on the flagstones and the cries of the children in the street and somewhere in the far distance a faint roar of traffic, and yet the room seemed curiously silent thanks to the absence of a telescreen. Folly, 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 he thought again. It was inconceivable that they could frequent this place for more than a few weeks without being caught, but the temptation of having a hiding place that was truly their own, indoors and near at hand, had been too much for both of them. For some time after their visit to the church belfry, it had been impossible to arrange meetings. Working hours had been drastically increased in anticipation of Hate Week. It was more than a month distant, but the enormous complex preparations that it entailed were throwing extra work onto everybody. Finally, both of them managed to secure a free afternoon on the same day. They had agreed to go back to the clearing in the wood. On the evening beforehand, they met briefly in the street. As usual, Winston hardly looked at Julia as they drifted toward one another in the crowd. But from the short glance he gave her, it seemed to him that she was paler than usual.
"It's all off,"
she murmured as soon as she judged it safe to speak.
"Tomorrow, I mean."
"What?"
"Tomorrow afternoon. I can't come."
"Why not?"
"Oh, the usual reason. It started early this time."
For a moment, he was violently angry. During the month that he had known her, the nature of his desire for her had changed. At the beginning, there had been little true sensuality in it. Their first lovemaking had been simply an act of the will, but after the second time it was different. The smell of her hair, the taste of her mouth, the feeling of her skin seemed to have got inside him, or into the air all round him. She had become a physical necessity, something that he not only wanted, but felt that he had a right to. When she said she could not come, he had the feeling that she was cheating him. But just at this moment, the crowd pressed them together, and their hands accidentally met. She gave the tips of his fingers a quick squeeze that seemed to invite not desire, but affection. It struck him that when one lived with a woman, this particular disappointment must be normal, a recurring event. And a deep tenderness, such as he had not felt for her before, suddenly took hold of him. He wished that they were a married couple of 10 years standing. He wished they were walking through the streets with her just as they were doing now, but openly and without fear, talking of trivialities and buying odds and ends for the household. He wished, above all, that they had some place where they could be alone together without feeling the obligation to make love every time they met. It was not actually at that moment, but at some time on the following day, that the idea of renting Mr. Charrington's room had occurred to him. When he suggested it to Julia, she had agreed with unexpected readiness. Both of them knew that it was lunacy. It was as though they were intentionally stepping nearer to their graves. As he sat waiting on the edge of the bed, he thought again of the cellars of the Ministry of Love. It was curious how that predestined horror moved in and out of one's consciousness. There it lay, fixed in future times, preceding death as surely as 99 precedes 100. One could not avoid it, but one could perhaps postpone it. And yet instead, every now and again, by a conscious, willful act, one chose to shorten the interval before it happened. At this moment, there was a quick step on the stairs. Julia burst into the room. She was carrying a tool bag of coarse brown canvas, such as he had sometimes seen her carrying to and fro at the ministry. He started toward her to take her in his arms, but she disengaged herself rather hurriedly, partly because she was still holding the tool bag.
"Half a second,"
she said.
"Just let me show you what I've brought. Did you bring some of that filthy victory coffee? I thought you would. You can chuck it away again, because you won't be needing it. Look here."
She fell on her knees, threw open the bag, and tumbled out some spanners and a screwdriver that filled the top part of it. Underneath were a number of neat paper packets. The first packet that she passed to Winston had a strange and yet vaguely familiar feeling. It was filled with some kind of heavy, sand-like stuff which yielded whenever you touched it. "It isn't sugar," he said.
"Real sugar. Not saccharine sugar. And here's a loaf of bread, proper white bread, not our bloody stuff, and a little pot of jam, and here's a tin of milk. But look, this is the one I'm really proud of. I had to wrap a bit of sacking around it because..."
But she did not need to tell him why she had wrapped it up. The smell was already filling the room, a rich, hot smell which seemed like an emanation from his early childhood, but which one did occasionally meet with even now, blowing down a passageway before a door slammed, or diffusing itself mysteriously in a crowded street, sniffed for an instant, and then lost again. "It's coffee," he murmured. "Real coffee."
"It's inner party coffee. There's a whole kilo here,"
she said. "How did you manage to get hold of all these things?"
"It's all inner party stuff. There's nothing those swine don't have, nothing. But of course, waiters and servants and people pinch things. And look, I got a little packet of tea as well."
Winston had squatted down beside her. He tore open a corner of the packet. "It's real tea, not blackberry leaves."
"There's been a lot of tea about lately. They've captured India or something,"
she said vaguely.
"But listen, dear, I want you to turn your back on me for 3 minutes. Go and sit on the other side of the bed. Don't go too near the window. And don't turn around till I tell you."
Winston gazed abstractedly through the muslin curtain down in the street. The red-armed woman was still marching to and fro between the washtub and the line. She took two more pegs out of her mouth and sang with deep feeling, "They say that time heals all things. They say you can always forget. But the smiles and the tears across the years, they twist my heartstrings yet. She knew the whole driveling song by heart, it seemed. Her voice floated upward with the sweet summer air, very tuneful, charged with a sort of happy melancholy. One had the feeling that she would have been perfectly content if the June evening had been endless and the supply of clothes inexhaustible, to remain there for 1,000 years, pegging out diapers and singing rubbish. It struck him as a curious fact that he had never heard a member of the party singing alone and spontaneously. It would even have seemed slightly unorthodox, a dangerous eccentricity, like talking to oneself. Perhaps it was only when people were somewhere near the starvation level that they had anything to sing about.
The Mike Malloy Show on Air America Radio.
Clarence Young, a scientist at GlaxoSmithKline, on how far he's willing to go.
Finding a new antibiotic is about as easy as catching one particular snowflake. It takes about 15 years to find one that works. Then, as soon as the bacteria develop resistance, we're right back where we started. But everyone benefits from antibiotics, so the war never stops. At GSK, quitting's just not an option.
GlaxoSmithKline. Today's medicines, tomorrow's miracles.
Hello, my name's Smokey, and I'm a hardcore biker. I'm here to tell you that Geico... Hold on a sec. Is this the right music, bro? Really? Anyway, Geico covers most kinds of bikes, so you can get money-saving discounts whether you're a casual weekend rider or a hardcore biker like me. See, man, I'm not sure. This music don't make a lick of sense.
For a free rate quote on motorcycle insurance, visit geico.com or call 1-800-44-CYCLE. Geico Motorcycle Insurance. Let's ride.
your host for a Pian's Friends Future, it's Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Let me squeeze in this little bit of sound. This was at a hearing this morning, I guess a State Department budget hearing or something, a Senate hearing. And Condoleezza Rice was sitting there testifying in her school marmish way to some committee. And suddenly, all of a sudden, there arose in the audience, well, we'll let you hear it how it was reported on CNN. This is a bit of sound from CNN. At the very end, you can hear, what's your name again?
That would be Darren Kagan.
Darren Kagan. I'm just got a blank on her mind. I just see her and Rush doing it, and I almost collapse into a pool of saliva. I don't know. All right, here it is.
Our budget timelines and practices, and it's therefore necessary.
How many of you have children in the illegal and immoral war? How many of you have children in this illegal and immoral war?
At arms, please restore order.
In this illegal and immoral war.
The committee will come to order.
More on the testimony that took place in a little bit. We're going to continue monitoring the hearing and bring you updates.
More on the testimony that took place in a little bit. We're going to continue monitoring and bring you updates. No, you didn't, Darren. So you heard the man stand up in the crowd and say, how many of you have children in this immoral and illegal war?
Oh, well, we're going to bring you more of the updates. We have to go now because there is real human drama. There's somebody challenging Condoleezza Rice, our wonderful Secretary of State. So we got to go now. Have I told you anything about OxyContin? I didn't even know about it until I started dating, you know, him.
All right, thanks to our crew for another excellent night of production, except for the fact that the phone calls kept dropping off. Program, that's not our guy's fault. That's something else. But the program is engineered for us in New York by Justin Yuen and our resident rock star, Jason Isaac. D. Neal is our associate producer and also the granddaughter of Philip Markowitz. Thanks for that, deal. She answered your calls tonight. She also handles the blog site airamericaradio.com/Malloy, or Mike Malloy, slash Mike Malloy. And I haven't written anything for quite a few days. We'll get back to it. Chris in Minnesota is our senior correspondent. Mark Marshall, our webmaster. Ben Birch maintains WhiteRoseSociety.org. Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief. Remember, if you live in or around Madison, Wisconsin, check out MikeMalloy.com for some information on my coming up there next Tuesday. All right? Catherine Bay is our executive producer. Sean is calling from Savannah, Georgia. Sean, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hey, Sean.
How you doing?
I'm doing fine, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. You are the truth speaker, and I really appreciate you.
Well, thanks.
And, you know, I just wanted to say I bought XM Radio just to get Air America, so...
Well, it's working out then, right?
Well, it's profitable. I want people to know that the progressive movement is growing, and I put money out that I didn't have to get XM so I could listen to you guys. Because I was driving through South Carolina the other day trying to get Air America, and I found Rush Limbaugh on 6 stations.
Oh, sure.
And so, you know, if people do not think that there is a nationwide brainwashing scheme going on, you know, they really need to look in the mirror and examine themselves because we are being brainwashed.
That's absolutely true, Sean. This has been going on for a number of years, and when you can't drive across this country, you can't go 25 or 30 miles without picking up another AM station that carries this filthy pig or his little parrot, his little butt boy, Sean Hannity, in the afternoon. It's astonishing. It's astonishing what Limbaugh and his clones have done to political discourse in this country. They have murdered it, and they're murdering America.
It's sickening. You know what? I say one thing. I don't call it conservatism. I call it destructivism.
It is.
Because it destroys everything in its path, and thankfully, eventually, it destroys itself.
One can
and it
hope.
Will destroy itself.
Yeah, one can only hope.
It will. We will win. We will win this, and they will lose. And that's what they're scared of hell out.
Yeah, I think you're
they
right.
Are. Sean, they're scared of it.
Yeah, Sean, thanks for checking in. I appreciate it. Drive safe, okay? Or safely.
All right, man. I really appreciate your work. You are awesome.
Thanks a lot, Sean. I can't do compliments. I'm sorry. Cheryl is calling from Seattle. Cheryl, welcome to the program. Oh my God, we're out of time. We got a minute, Cheryl. You want to try tomorrow? Cheryl? All right, Cheryl's not there. Okay. All right. Let's not take any more calls. I can get somebody on for 15 seconds. That doesn't make any sense. Thanks for participating in the program tonight, y'all. However you did that. We do have a minute left, don't we? What do we have? We have a minute? Oh, what the hell. All right, let's get Adam in here from Fort Lauderdale very quickly. Adam, let her rip. Hey.
Yeah, Mike. Well, I agree with that, Sean. I do think you're tremendous, and I unfortunately have to listen to that Rush Limbaugh occasionally, and it's just disgusting what you hear. An egotistical pig that spews hatred and lies and just is in love with this George Bush administration. It's just horrible.
I know.
But I wanted to say that I really don't enjoy Ed Schultz very much at all. And I oftentimes will change the station to avoid listening to him, and I have to listen to Neil Bork.
Now, Neil Bortz is a real Nazi. Neil Bortz could very easily be a concentration camp guard and enjoy it.
Exactly.
He's an evil, evil man.
Yes. They preempt to put Ed Schultz on. They screw up the whole format. I end up having to stay up till 1 to 4 in the morning to hear Janine and Sam.
Oh, my God. That's not right. Let's hope that someday that changes. Adam, I have to leave it there. I am real sorry. Check back in. Maybe tomorrow we'll have more time to talk. Thanks for checking in, pal. That's it from us tonight. Thanks for participating. I do appreciate it. I'll see you tomorrow night, okay? Take care. Watch your back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Air America Radio.
Mike Malloy on Air America Radio.
You're already doing what's hard for your health. You diet. That's hard. You do regular exercise. That's harder. You even get a colonoscopy. The hardest. If your doctor says you're at risk for a heart attack, he could tell you that adding Bayer low dose is a simple way to help prevent 1 out of 3 heart attacks. Now that's simple. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen. Bayer low dose. A little does a lot.
The following is a message from Brutus at the National Disaster Search Dog Foundation.
Last October, 3 buildings collapsed. I was called in to help. 2 little kids were missing. I looked everywhere. Then I found them. They were crying. We all were.
Be part of the search. Call 1-888-4-K-9-HERO or visit SearchDogFoundation.org. Made possible by Search Dog USA.